freedom970.com
or Freedom 970 online.
The Six Pillars of Freedom on Freedom 970, KUFO AM, Portland.
Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, welcome to the show that gives you the opportunity to call in and ask a question of a financial planner, a estate planning attorney, and a CPA. So we have all the bases covered. And if you've got a question, pick up that phone, give us a call, 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626 or toll free 800-990-0750. And remember, your questions is what makes this show go. And that's what we like to have happen. In studio this morning with me is Kevin Steggy with the Baker Coastal CPA firm.
Good morning, Jack.
Morning, Kevin. And Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm.
Good morning, gentlemen.
And Carl, it's good to see you this week.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be back.
We missed you, and Kevin and I got to answer a lot of legal questions, and we just used your name.
Oh, good, good. That explains a lot for this last week.
Yeah, those strange phone calls got during the week. You said what? Well, anyway, listen, this is an opportunity for you to call and ask a question. With all the activity going on, there's a lot of things going on economically, but There's a lot of things going on politically, too, and we had a big major shakeup on Tuesday. And, but also this week, the unemployment report came out. And I have to tell you, I live in Vancouver and I get the Columbian. And the Columbian is so, I almost feel like calling them Pravda. They're so far to the left, everything they say is so slanted one way, it's almost sickening. They did a total hatchet job on Stewart. She wins. They did a real hatchet job on Wilson, Linda Wilson. In fact, the day before the election, which I think should be totally improper to do, they ran a story about how she was supposedly rude to people, and the people that she was rude to were a bunch of liberals. Go figure. No wonder she was rude to them. But the fact is, they tried to cover it up and say that some of them were Republicans, some of them were Democrats. The Columbian doesn't do a very good job checking their facts. They also run a big story on the front page today called Economic Report. Streak of healthy job growth continues. 9 straight months of adding 200,000 jobs. Longest stretch since 95. Well, if you believe in the Tooth Fairy, you believe in that. Because let me tell you the rest of the story about the reporting. And I thought yesterday, if you listen to any of the news networks, including Fox, which is supposed to be on the right, but they're not on a lot of things, a lot of the reports they were giving about the unemployment numbers just aren't factual. Here's the reality about the jobs report. Jobs were reported at 214,000 in October. Unemployment rate fell to 5.8%. If you go on the internet and look at the unemployment numbers put out by the United States government, you go to this number 6 on how they report it, which is the way they used to report unemployment. Unemployment in America is 11.5%. That's a fact. Nobody talks about it. We've been dodging it. It's been over 12 now. For the first time in a long time, it's dropped below 12, but it's actually 11.5%. That is a fact of life, and nobody talks about it. I can't believe the stupid Republicans don't even talk about it. They would have something to really talk about if they would go and they would hold the government's feet to the fire on reporting real numbers. Not only that, this is going to get you. Here's a report, and I'm taking this from Harry Dent's research report that I got. And Harry Dent is about as he doesn't like the right, he doesn't like the left, he doesn't like any politician. He doesn't like the Tea Party, he doesn't like anybody. I mean he's totally about the numbers. He's all about the numbers. Here's what Dent said. I read you the fact that the unemployment rose by 214,000 jobs in October. Unemployment fell slightly to 5.8%. The consensus estimate was 233,000 jobs created last month, so this report is a bit light. But the Bureau of Labor Statistics adjusted previous 2 months by higher than 30,000 jobs. They go back in, they adjust jobs. Here's what it means, though. The report is very middle of the road. It doesn't change anyone's estimate of what the Fed will do or not do. Chances are that it won't do much to move the market either way. But here's the thing. As usual, one buried piece of information is the birth rate death adjustment for the BLS, and that's the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Guesses at new jobs created. It's a guess, folks. It's a guess. They just take it out of the air. This month's guess was 137,000 new people without the pilfering. The actual number of new jobs created in the survey was a mere 77,000 jobs. So when somebody's telling you the economy has turned around, you need to say, and one of the things I hear all the time, the president says, we've created more jobs. We've created jobs. What he's not saying is, and this is one of those stories about, is the glass half full or is the glass half empty? Well, yes, they've created new jobs. However, there are 5 million less people working today than there was 6 years ago. The average earnings, and Kevin, you reported this a few weeks ago. You did a report on this. Over the last 6 years, average income of American families has went down every single year. We are not making more money. We are not having a higher standard of living. The only thing that's been saving grace for us is we've been in a deflationary period. Just like Harry Dent's been predicting, we're going to have deflation, not inflation. We're going into a deflationary period. Home prices are lower. Gasoline is lower. A lot, our cost of fuel is getting lower. Those things are helping hold the economy together. But I'll tell you, if we have an upshoot in those costs, it's going to be very, very tough. You know, I like to give the stock report, and I hear all about these stock numbers. And the thing I will caution you, I watched an interview yesterday with Charles Gasparino, who I like as a Wall Street Journal or Wall Street guy. And he and Harry Dent had a little face-to-face conversation. And Charlie Gasparino made the statement to him that, well, you're the only economist that's predicting a crash. Well, Charlie Gasparino needs to open up his email because I know he gets Newsweek like I do. And every day there's an ad in there by Widener, who is a author of the book Aftershock. And I've talked about it on the show before. And if you haven't read Aftershock and you haven't read the updated Aftershock, the Widener's two brothers and a lady economist, I can't remember her name, in 2006 accurately predicted what was going to happen in 2008. Now, the last 2 years, they've been predicting a major crash in the market. They've been predicting. Now, Harry Dent is a optimist compared to the Widener's. Widener's are predicting a total collapse of the economy as we know it. They're predicting a total collapse of the government. Now, Dent doesn't go that far, and I think they're over the top, and I don't think we're going to have a total collapse of the government. But, I mean, they're really bleak in their prediction. Dent's just saying, hey, we're going to have a very tough 7 to 9 years. We're going to have a recession, and it's going to be very difficult for 7 to 9 years. But he's not calling for the total collapse of the government like some economists are. So what I advise everybody to do is to get knowledge, look at these books, read these books, understand what they're saying so that you can make up your own mind what the opportunities are to do it. I'm going to give a quick rundown here of the Dow Jones. The Dow Jones closed another all-time high, 17,573.29. Now, here's the key to investing. The Dow Jones closed on 10907 at 14,164. That's exactly 7 years and 1 month ago. And during that 7 years and 1 month, the Dow Jones is up 24.07%. Not per year, folks. That's for the whole time. That's an average annual return of 3.40. Excuse me, it's not an average return, it's a real rate of return. That's the real money rate that the Dow has grown at over that period of time. The Dow closed on 12/31/99 at 11,497.12. It's up a total of 52.85 in 13 years and 10 months. So I got to tell you, that's an average of 3.81%. That is a good 2.5 times less than the 80 years before previous average. That's ridiculous. Now let's look at the S&P 500. The S&P 500 closed at 2,031. Again, all-time highs. Now, where do we stand on the S&P when it hit 10,907, when it hit the previous high before the crash and then the comeback? It was at 1565.15. So in 7 years and 1 month, the S&P is up 29.82 or 4.21% per year. That's real rate of return. That's real rate of return, not average. Real rate of return. The S&P closed on 12/31/99 at 1469.25. So in 13 years and 10 months, the S&P is up 38.29 or over that 13 years and 10 months, 2.76%. I got to tell you, that's not growth, and that's not turning the economy around. Now, just to be fair, during this period of time, we had three presidents. We had Larry, Moe, and Curley, better known as Bill Clinton, George Bush, and Barack Obama. So both political parties have to share in this crappy economy we've had since the turn of the century. So all three of them are to blame. So, if somebody calls me, sends me an email and says I'm picking on, on the Republicans or I'm picking on the Democrats, I'm saying both political parties equally sharing this. This is an equal opportunity thing. They've all done the wrong thing. They've not had the courage to do the things you got to do to turn the economy around. Let's hope now that they're going to get their heads together and do something to turn the economy around, because we've got to do it. Because I got to tell you, with the debt being close to $17.8 trillion, my grandkids, my great-grandkids, you people listening, your kids, your great-grandkids, your grandkids, they're all going to be paying for what we're not willing to do and what our politicians are not willing to bite the bullet. And somebody's got to bite it, because if you don't, it's not going to get any better. When you keep kicking a can down the road, eventually you've got two things that are going to happen. Either you're going to lose the can, or the can's going to become destructive and just disintegrate. So what's going to happen to our economy? Is the economy just, it's not going to just go away. The economy can't fix itself. You can't fix it by wishing it would go away. That it doesn't work that way. Somebody has to make a financial plan to make it work out, and then we have to live with it, and we have to fight through it. And it is not going to be easy. It's going to be tough. But it's what we have to do as an economy. So my suggestion to you is, if you voted this last week and you voted for somebody, then I would tell you to get active, and you need to send them emails, you need to send them letters and tell them you want the safety of this country to be number one, you want the economics of this country to be right there with it number one, and that they got to turn this country around. They're the ones that can do it. The politicians can do it. The average citizen is starting to do it. We're seeing that in the personal side of it, but we're not seeing it in the government side of it. Governments just keep spending more and more and more. And at least the good thing right now is we're not printing funny money to fund it. That's the good side. Well, listen, if you've got a question, pick up that phone, give us a call. We hopefully have an answer. Number's 503-417-7626 or toll free 800-990-0750. Before I go, I want to tell you that on my website at pfgwm.com. If you're getting close to Social Security and you want to know about Social Security, I have an excellent video on there that you can go in the comfort of your home and watch this presentation. We also have a free, you can get a free download book about Social Security, and I would recommend you do that. And we will do a free analysis of your Social Security benefits if you want that done. But you need to sit down, watch the video, and take action. So I'm going to take a quick break, come right back with Carl's comments. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepson.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is time for Carl's comments, and today we're going to talk about the second, third, and fourth time around, who gets the inheritance. And there's dead silence. I just thought there might be. Well, what I'm going to talk about is blended families, you know, his kids, her kids. We're going to talk about what happens after remarriage, you know, second, third, or fourth time. After the death of a spouse or the divorce of a spouse can also cause that sort of thing. So who gets the stuff? The surviving spouse's kids or the decedent spouse's kids? You know, who gets the stuff? And then there's also the new relationships. This is another second, third, and fourth time around. And I'm going to resurrect some of my favorite characters. There's Geraldine Golddigger. There's George Gigolo. Candy the caregiver and Paul the pool boy. And you all know who you are out there. That's one of those things that it does, you know, you don't think about this, but I'm telling you, when my mom moved into the retirement home, there are all these little guys with bow ties that stood out front of her door.
Well, you know, Carl, in this room, there's only one guy that could be Paul the pool boy, and that's
Well, that's true. That's Yeah. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah. Where did that come from? I get no respect.
Well, no, that's just a recognition of your youth and appearance.
That's a compliment to your, it's a compliment.
You know, Chuck and I probably aren't going to be, you know, okay, in a bathing suit or anything, really. that would be way too much information for anybody.
Yeah.
So anyway.
We're not going there.
Yeah. So anyway, these kinds of things do happen, and it becomes a great concern for the loved one of the person who's either entering into this new relationship or whatever. And it can be really problematic. A lot of times what happens is that, you know, it creates some fights with the various children or various relatives. And the next thing you know, people are pointing their finger at mom or dad, and they're saying, well, they obviously don't know what they're doing because they gave their money to that wicked woman or, you know, whatever, the wicked man. And there must have been, you know, Candy must have really been, you know, pushing away on the undue influence thing. Or, you know, he's just completely incapacitated. You know, he had a cold last year, so he doesn't know what he's doing. Now, granted, it is quite possible, and there are many times when undue influence is a calculated, you know, elder abuse type fraud that comes upon people. And that's very commonplace where, you know, someone kind of gets a hold of the lonely old guy or the lonely old gal, and they isolate them from their families, and they tell them that nobody loves them except the caregiver or the pool boy, and that they ought to be, you know, they ought to really be beholden to them because they take them to the grocery and to the, you know, to the pharmacy, and they, you know, they take them out to lunch after church and or whatever, and by the way, they should also, you know, give them their house. I mean, that's a very commonplace kinds of modus operandi, I guess you might say, for these folks. And it's tragic because it really pries on the real feelings of people. Who one of the worst things for elderly people is loneliness, and a lot of times that in and of itself is almost debilitating for them. And so somebody comes along and, you know, and really, you know, plays on that, and it really has some bad effects. So where do we get some help for this? Is there any kind of you know, other than trying to prove incapacity or undue influence, because that's really hard to do. And there again, if they're competent and they're of good sound mind and they choose to do this, then the flip side of that is, you know, the kids have no business telling them what to do. You know, they might just prefer that new spouse and figure the kids are on their own and the new spouse needs it. Who knows? But nonetheless, it still always causes some grief. And sometimes people do things together. The couple do things together to make plans for this. And so here's a couple things they can do. One is they can make a contract to make a will or a contract not to revoke the dispositive provisions in a will. In other words, they agree amongst themselves that a common frame is, okay, half the inheritance goes to the husband's kids and half goes to the wife's kids. That's very commonplace kind of thing. Another thing is that they can create some irrevocable trusts at the time of death, such that neither one of them can actually change the dispositive terms. And again, they can make it, you know, all the kids share equally, or they have 50-50 on one side or the other, or however they want to do it. But they've agreed upon it themselves, and they say, we're so sure that we want to do this that we're going to basically put it into stone and make sure that it happens. Now, here's one of the problems with that strategy, and that is, more often than not, the person who controls all the money in the irrevocable trust is the spouse, the surviving spouse, and there's always room for some mischief, even if it's unlawful. There's still room for mischief because they have the actual control over the money. So if you really want to go one step further and make sure that the irrevocable trust gets enforced, then you probably want to have an independent trustee, at least an independent co-trustee. Or even an adversarial co-trustee. You know, I mean, maybe you should have one kid from each side of the family doing it. That way, at least if they start stealing the money, somebody's going to go to court and get somebody to stop. My own preference is to employ the use of a professional fiduciary who can make sense, and they could very well be a co-trustee as well, or the sole trustee. Or you could even appoint them as what's called a trust advisor, and that's kind of like a trustee, but not quite. And they have various sundry responsibilities. My experience with them so far has been relatively minimal, and I'm not sure that the trust advisor is a little bit uncertain because it's not really defined as to what they're supposed to do. You have to define it yourself. So my feeling is that the co-trustee or the independent fiduciary is a better way to go. But nonetheless, those are problems that so many people face, and I have a lot of times people coming in, and I'll oftentimes have kids coming in and say, well, you know, mom and dad, or mom's doing this, or dad's doing that. And, you know, I mean, sometimes it's because that's what they want to do. You know, it might be that they come in and they say, well, it's just appalling. They're giving all the money to that woman. And it turns out that, you know, how long they've been married? Well, you know, 18 years. I mean, I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. What? You know, that's a long-term marriage today. So why not? So anyway, that's Carl's comments. And if you have any questions, give us a call at 503-417-7626 or 800-990-0750 about the third, fourth, or fifth time around, or anything else in the law.
Well, you know, Carl, one of the things I can add to what you were talking about is one of the things we really recommend to our clients, and particularly to their children, if the parents do end up being put into a nursing facility or some kind of a care facility, that you constantly go in and see them and make sure that nobody is trying to take advantage of them, because it's pretty obvious when they are.
Absolutely. In fact, if there is no planning that precludes any kind of gerrymandering of the inheritance, then the number one thing, and I think this is the best thing for families, is to maintain very good contact and observation of the family member. I don't mean to use it for influence. I mean just to find out what's going on. Now, I realize different families are, you know, some families are very, very closed mouth about anything having to do with finances. And if, you know, some kids ask their parents about money, they're going to reach a, you know, a blank wall. But otherwise, you know, at least you can find out who they're seeing and what they're doing and how they're feeling, and, you know, and at least make sure that they're not feeling like they're really, really lonely. And if you perceive that they're changing their attitude towards you for no apparent reason, then you have to kind of wonder what's going on. So,
you know, Carl, I was thinking the other day of putting together a segment that would be kind of a very simplistic way that would cover most people's situations that don't have an estate plan or something in place to say, hey, just do, you know, consider this, consider this, consider this. But, you know, you bring up enough points that really there's no cookie cutter out there that fits everybody. And, you know, something like this, just, you know, it doesn't mean that everyone's estate planning is difficult. It's just that there's a number of wrinkles and options that everybody has to consider I think, do an effective estate plan.
Well, I think that's a very good observation. I can say that when I first started practicing many years ago, you know, when we wrote the wills with quill pens, most of the wills looked a lot alike. It said, you know, all to my spouse and then to my kids. I mean, that was basically it in one form or another. And now there's a lot of different things because there are, you know, there are different family formations and the needs are different. And it's really a lot different. I find more and more, I find that I draft individual provisions of maybe unique characteristics of a particular will or trust very frequently. And it's kind of fun, but it's more work. So anyway, you're right there.
Well, listen, we're going to be right back with the tax investigator. You're listening to Investing Simplified. Give us a call. If you got a question, pick up that phone. We'll be right back.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
You are listening to Investing Simplified, and two rousing segments for me to follow up on. But Chuck, I do have to just make a comment regarding the unemployment numbers. And you know, before the show starts, we chat amongst ourselves, and when the real solutions to the world's problems happen before we go on the air. But you know, one thing we had talked about was, with some of our clients, we've noticed that there are a number of skilled positions that aren't getting filled. These are small businesses, and they've got good jobs, good benefits, good wage, but they're not getting filled. And so either, you know, unemployment, hey, is good, or maybe it's a worst case scenario that not only is our unemployment up, but we don't have the skilled people to fill those positions. And I think, you know, as you know, Carl, you had mentioned, we're either not trained or qualified, or we're not willing to work. And so I think that's just a not a good scenario. So
yeah, we've got a caller on the line. Alan's got a question. Alan, are you there?
I'm here. I have a question for Carl.
Well, question away.
You were talking about trust, and that reminded me of a situation I went through with my brothers and sisters. My mom and dad set up a living trust, and my father passed away. My mother became the trustee, and my younger brother was the co-trustee. I asked to see a copy of the trust. He says, no, I can't do that. You're not a trustee, and only I can see it. You're only a beneficiary. And I asked my other brothers and sisters to join with me in the request, and they kind of hemmed and hawed and acted like it wasn't important. And I never could get him to show me the trust until my mother died. And then when the trust was revealed, then I understood why he didn't want me to see the trust, because it was very, very unfavorable toward me in particular. And I just wondered, what obligation does a trustee or co-trustee have to show the trust to the beneficiaries?
Well, this is a very interesting question, because it's one that's one of some debate now. Were you in Oregon here at the time?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Oregon has adopted a version of what's called the Uniform Trust Code. And the Uniform Trust Code has some reporting requirements. And one of the things it does say, and there again, some of these can be altered by the agreement, but especially during the lifetime of the original trustor, in this case, your mother would be one of those. Generally speaking, since she would have been the only person who's getting money at that point, then and she's the creator of the trust, she probably, unless they created an irrevocable trust after Dad died, which is not uncommon, but let's just assume that it was just a regular living trust with no irrevocability built into it at the time that Dad died, then she would be able to control that trust, and if she didn't want to give out any information, she probably wouldn't have to.
She actually asked him to give her a copy of the trust and to show it to me, and even when she asked, he refused.
Well, then that's totally wrong. That's absolutely totally wrong. She has a right to fire the trustee unless she's incapacitated, and it doesn't sound as though she was.
No, she wasn't, but she was very timid, and she didn't want to upset anybody, and she felt bad that I couldn't see it, but she couldn't persuade him to show it to me, and I didn't want to make her feel bad either, so I just didn't let it go.
I do understand that, and, you know, the sad thing is that one of the things I advise that's one of the worst things you can do as a trustee is to hide the ball. And even if you're allowed to, and the reason is because it is fertile ground for lawsuits. It almost always ends up that way, especially after the final spouse dies. If it's not uncommon that we see trustees who just say, "Well, I'm the trustee, and I'm not giving you squat, and I'll tell you when I tell you," and that's not a good idea. And more often than not, what do they have to hide? The only reason they have to hide that is that either there's something in that trust that they don't want anybody to see, and that probably means that they may have had something to do with it, or, you know, there's some shenanigans going on about where the money is. And that's where it raises those kinds of suspicions. So it's a difficult kind of thing. We try to draft in some requirements. For example, if I were doing that and I had a suspicion that there was going to be a problem with transparency, you could write stuff that says, notwithstanding what the law says, I'm the trustor and I want a monthly report or an annual report, and I want a copy of the trust sent to all of my kids, or I want a copy of the trust, you know, sent to whoever. That usually isn't the case. Oftentimes, families don't like to, like you said, just like your mom, they don't want to rock the boat. They really don't want to cause hard feelings, and yet they may very well be being influenced by, you know, by the one side or the other.
So if I understand you correctly, he was within his legal rights not to show it, even though ethically...
He wasn't by himself. I think she was within her rights to say no. I think if you want to avoid hurt feelings, or at least, you know, that it's probably a good idea to have transparency. But the co-trustee by himself, when she's the trustor and co-trustee, I mean, I think that because I think she could probably, in most trusts, now again, I haven't seen this trust, so I suppose it could be different. But generally speaking, the trustor, if they're competent, can fire the trustee.
Yeah, she wasn't going to do that.
Yeah.
So he should have followed her will. I knew all along that she had more authority than he did. But it was a very sad situation.
Yeah,
there was
a
rift in our family for several years. I've mended it. I've forgiven them all, and I've acted like nothing's happened. But in the back of my mind, I know that they were all conspiring, and it was a sad situation.
You know, it is. Unfortunately, it is, and it gives. And I try to caution my clients who set up these kinds of things that can be problematic because there's. Even if it's not having to do with the money, it has to do with this trust issue and with the way that the family views each other after the surviving spouse is deceased. Then it oftentimes leaves this lingering kind of psychological battle, at least, that goes on forever. And I try very hard to get my clients to try to preserve the harmony of the family as best they can. But sometimes they don't want that, or sometimes that's just not possible. And then, of course, then we do whatever they want. But, if it's possible, it's a good idea, I think, to preserve harmony. And one of the best ways to do that is make sure everybody knows what's going on.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. You've done a good job of answering my question.
You bet. Thanks.
Thanks, Alan. Good call. And now we're going to go back to the tax investigator and Kevin.
Yes, good stuff there. Appreciate the call. So anyway, I'll just leave that unemployment comment as is. But I know I went to the East Metro Economic Summit here several weeks back, and one of the issues that they had was. Getting qualified STEM workers, STEM being science, technology, engineering, and math, and we're just not doing a good job of getting qualified people out there. So I mean, that's another issue with our jobs issue that is just I think needs to be addressed.
Well, one of the things, Kevin, that's been real apparent about our so-called higher education. We've not been putting enough people in the right training places and right training skills to have job-ready skills when they get out of school, higher education, so they can come in the workplace. A liberal arts degree does not give you a lot of latitude for job experience. And, you know, evidence for what you said, and I've heard it from numerous people, too, who have technical companies that need technical skilled people, and they just can't find them. It's like I heard a guy talking about computer programming. If you're a whiz kid on computer programming, the sky's the limit for job opportunity, but they don't have enough.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. So continuing on very briefly in our little series of year-end tax planning, I'm only going to mention one small thing and then go on to a few other items, but... Just consider if you are needing to take additional money out of one of your retirement accounts and you are taking Social Security to help limit the taxability of your Social Security, consider a distribution from your Roth IRA. So I will just put that out there. For 2015, we have some new numbers for us, and I will briefly go over these so as we don't go to tears here over the monotony of these details, but we do have a number of our numbers indexed for inflation and adjusted for the coming year, 2015, and I'm going to give you two fine gentlemen a guess, although I think I already know Carl knows, of what the new federal taxable estate limit is. It was for 2014, $5.34 million. And I'm assuming not too many listeners out there know more than this, but at least it's a...
Karnak.
$5.43 million.
Wow, Carl. You're amazing. And I knew you spent 2 days at an estate seminar.
I did. I wasn't sitting there all the time with my...
He did actually get some knowledge from it.
I actually got that part.
You actually listened to the first 5 minutes of it. Okay. Personal exemptions going up another $100 or $50 to $4,000 per person. Standard deduction is now $12,600 for married folks. And, of course, single people are half of that at $6,300. If you're head of household, your standard deduction is $9,250. Gift tax, annual gift tax exclusion remains the same at $14,000. They rounded up or down to the nearest $1,000, and so the calculation comes in at the nearest $14,000. FSA, if your work has a flexible spending arrangement, instead of $2,500, it's $2,550, so not a big deal there. Of course, the tax brackets have slightly been tweaked. Again, this is all in the federal level. And then the foreign earned income exclusion, and this actually affects a number of our clients. It's a huge tax break for those who work out of the country for a significant time. It's gone from $99,200 to $100,800. So if you're working out of the country, definitely take advantage of that. So those are a few numbers to consider.
No changes on the IRA or the 401k contributions?
I haven't looked at those yet. But those do get changed, and I think those actually are those are tweaked up. I don't have those in front of me here right now, but yes, those are the 401k for sure. So,
well, interestingly enough, on the state side of that, Oregon still has this $1 million exemption because it doesn't get indexed for inflation. But Washington now has $2,012,000.
So it is indexed.
It is indexed,
then.
Yeah. So it went up $12,000.
Very good. So I wanted to talk briefly about, and this happens all of the time with clients, multiple times a year. And what happens when you purchase a piece of property during the year? How does that affect your tax return? And so I wanted to briefly cover that. And there's a couple differences. It depends whether it's your residence, whether it's a piece of investment real estate such as bare land, or whether it's a rental. And every time, if you use a tax preparer, if you purchase real property, bring in the two-page HUD closing statement that you get that breaks down the purchase price and all the prorations. That's gotta have that to do the tax return correctly. And pretty much all the numbers that you need are found on those two pages. Sometimes they even summarize it on one page, but just very valuable for tax prep. A lot of times, especially when you buy like your principal residence, you have significant proration of property taxes. They either charge you for the coming year, or they give you a refund because you're going to end up being paying for the whole year of taxes when you only owned it a part of a year. And so that either becomes a deduction or a recapture on your tax return. And so you need to really, the real property taxes need to be looked at closely on that. Interest does get prorated on those, but typically the interest is going to be included on your 1098 that comes from your lender at the end of the year. So you can pretty well rely that interest you don't need to worry about. And I think lastly, if you buy a rental, there's a lot more that needs to be done on the closing statement if you buy a rental, because you may have rent prorations in there. You may have homeowners associations that get prorated one way or the other, insurance. So, I mean, these are all things that are either deductible or need to be recaptured on your tax return. So pretty significant to look at. But I wanted to bring up one item that many of our investors may not know. So you go out and buy a piece of bare land, and you have taxes and interest that are prorated on your statement. And then you also pay your fair share of interest and property taxes throughout the year on this piece of bare land that you think is going to be fairly successful for you down the road. But you don't itemize deductions. And so you drop in your property taxes on your Schedule A, and you add in all the other itemized deductions, and you only come up to $8,000, and you're a married couple. Well, you've got a $12,600 standard deduction coming up. So what happens to those property taxes? They go the route of our marijuana voters in Oregon. They're wasted. They are simply wasted. So, but we do have an election. We do have an election.
That was a good one, Kevin. It was good, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Far out, man.
Yeah.
But there is an election that allows you to take property taxes and interest and add it into the basis. so that it is not wasted. And that is a key election for people that fit that profile. If you are not itemizing, you can make that election, add it into your basis so that in the future, you do have a higher cost basis when you sell the property. And so that's a nice little tidbit for our property investors.
You know, some of the things that you've been talking about may seem really simple to you, but for the rest of us mortals, it's really complicated. And that was one thing that I came to conclude at this continuing legal education thing. It's 2 days, and most all of it had to do with tax. And it was incredibly complicated as to how it's like, you know, how you have a Rubik's Cube with all of the reds and blues and whites and stuff like that. There's about, you know, 25 of the little squares on each side. Well, the tax code's like a Rubik's Cube, only it's got like a million squares on each side. It's like, and it twists and turns, and each little cube turns by itself. So it's just amazing. It's really, so you can almost bet that any kind of business transaction or real estate transaction has some kind of tax consequence. And that being the case, it's always prudent, especially if it involves any money at all. You should be, before you do it, you should consider talking to your tax professional, because and that would be somebody like Kevin, because there are so many nuances in it that unless you're doing it all the time, you can't possibly keep up on it.
Yes, I did see the glassy eyes when I was talking about prorations in the room here, but it's something we get excited about when we get that HUD statement in. We like to make short work of it. So
that's called excitement for a CPA.
He's
that's
easily right. Easily entertained, I guess.
Yeah. So. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break and come right back with the Knowledge Trust. You're listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
If I had a $1 million.
Well, if you got $1 million, you better pick up that phone and get some advice, and that's what we highly recommend. And Carl, one of the things you said about, you know, people doing real estate transactions or doing things that affect their taxes, they need to seek a professional. And one of the things we want to make clear on our show, we do give a disclosure at the start, but we talk in very general terms here, and the things we talk about are not necessarily a recommendation for somebody to go out and do, but certainly gives you a basic knowledge and hopefully directs you to go to talk to a professional about it. And I certainly tell people that, you know, if you're going to do your own will or you're going to do your own estate plan, I think it's well worth spending the money to talk to somebody that knows what they're doing so that you do it correctly. It's the same thing with taxes. I see people from time to time who do their own taxes, and self-employed people who are not taking advantage of a SEP contribution or not taking advantage of write-offs that they could do, and they're not getting them because on a lot of the internet programs you can do, it just doesn't give you that other side of it. Doesn't do the whole story, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story. And it doesn't give you that opportunity. And so I think anytime you're doing something like that, you got to seek a professional and get some advice.
Amen.
Amen. Everybody's agreeing to that. Yeah, that was an easy one. Well, listen, we're at the closing time here. We've got a few minutes, so if you do want to make a call, make that call right now because we'd have time to talk to you. It's 503-417-7626 or toll-free 800-990-0750. You know, the tax thing and the tax code, I think is needs to be overhauled, Kevin. I know you probably feel the same way. And I hope this new the new Senate and the new House come in and put some things together to help the economy get growing, to actually grow, and get some things to help the average working person. And I think so often we miss that part out there, talking about the large corporations and the small thing. Everybody forgets 70% of all Americans are employed by small businesses. We don't all work for major corporations. Most people do not work for major corporations. They work for small companies.
You know, Chuck, I'm going to be interested to see between now and the end of the year what happens on extending the tax breaks or provisions that they've extended the last several years. We've been assured by our think tanks in Washington, D.C., that, hey, these are going to happen, you know, count on it, so on and so forth. It's going to be really interesting to see if they do or not. I have heard that probably the biggest provision that will affect our economy is the Section 179 expense election, which allows businesses to deduct the full cost of equipment they put in service. Right now, it's at $500,000. For the 2013 and for 2014, because it ended, it went down to $25,000. So a huge drop. But if they extend that, that would be really beneficial. But they need to give people time, businesses time, to go out and buy that equipment if they haven't. But I think it's just going to be, I've heard that they've separated that out from a lot of the other provisions, maybe to fast track it through. And then who knows what's going to happen to the other provisions that a lot of us rely on, you know, the middle class and stuff.
Well,
so it should be interesting.
I really wish the government would take tax planning and look at it seriously and make some things and make it permanent. Like you and I talked about last week, we have many clients who have to take their RMD. They don't need the money. They would like to be able to just give it directly to a charity. It just seems insane to me that the government's got to stonewall that. They can't open up their eyes and say, okay, this can help a lot of people. This can help get that money back into the economy, because otherwise those retired people are going to take the money, pay the tax on it, put it in another investment or savings, and not put it back into the economy, where if they could give it to help a charity or help an organization grow and help people. Isn't that what we should be doing?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, it's good that we have checks and balances, that the Democrats balance the Republicans and the Republicans balance the Democrats and stuff. You don't want either one spinning off into their extremes, although one side should get more weight than the other, but that's another conversation. But so at least our system is working. It's not perfect, and I think these are some of the problems that we do have with our current system. But it's you look around the world, and it's a whole lot better than a lot that's out there. So,
well, yeah, there's no question. We have the greatest place in the world to live. I mean, there's, you know, I wouldn't want to live any other place. And we still have the greatest opportunity. I hope we just keep that going. But it would be nice to get a little common sense in the politics side of it, and particularly when it comes to our tax code, to actually get one that we have in place for a while and not have to wait till December to have Congress say, okay, you can do it now. It's kind of stupid. Why don't we just set some guidelines, set the rules, and say, okay, these are going to be the rules for the next 10 years. And have it graduated with inflation if you want, but set them so everybody knows.
Well, all it seems like it's, first of all, it's very complicated stuff, number one. But number two, I think that, there's sort of a brinksmanship that goes on with that is used as sort of a bargaining chip to do one thing or another. But I just like to think that the, you know, that people are of goodwill. Let's say for the moment of the assumption, which may be a wrong assumption, that all of the politicians are of goodwill. And I guess one could say then that everyone's one person's common sense is another person's folly, and that's why they fight about it. But I'm not sure that that's true. But it does seem like common sense is the last thing that's common in the Congress.
Well, you know, there are some basic fundamentals that the government could do to make life easy for the average American worker. And that is, they could have a tax code that is fairer to the working person and one that is consistent. And I think that's one of the problems I see in the tax code is that there's no consistency. It's consistently changing, and that's the bad part. And so I know you probably have to go to a lot of classes and do a lot of studying to stay up on it, and I know that's difficult, but it would seem to me that we could do something to legitimately help the average citizen.
Yeah, the problem is it's directly tied to government, the purse strings of the government funding, and there's different perspectives on how much should go there. And so this is how each one pulls or tightens the strings in their own way. So.
Yeah, and who pays the lion's share? I mean, I think there's that. I mean, you know, there's a tension between, you know, the average American versus the big corporation versus the wealthy guy versus the poor priest, and you know, on who gets to bear the you know, and what constitutes a fair burden for each. I, you know, those are hard questions.
Oh, very hard questions. Yeah, I mean, it always is the question. It's a very, very difficult thing. Well, listen, you're listening to Investing Simplified. Have yourself a great weekend. We'll be back next week. We're either going to have Harry Dent or Rodney Johnson. I haven't got a confirm yet of who we're going to have on the show. Kevin, how does somebody get a hold of you?
We're at BakerColson.com, 503-666-5569.
And Carl?
We're at warrenallen.com and 503-255-8795.
We're at pfgwm.com, and I highly recommend if you're getting close to Social Security or you're in the retirement red zone, which is 10 years before retirement or 10 years after retirement, you got to definitely look at our Social Security information there on the site. And I also have another site called AskTheFinancialDoctor.com. Visit that. There's some very good information there as well. Thank you very much for listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be back next week.